I think if there's one label that we as Baptists have tried really hard to shake, but not with much success, it's the label of isolationists. I think many of our non-Baptistic Reformed brothers and sisters view us as having a sort of isolationist tendency, that's almost what we do instinctively, We disassociate, and one of the concerns that our Reformed brothers and sisters have is that so often Baptist churches willingly disassociate themselves from church history. There's a sort of willingness to say we'll just sort of go around, 1,500 years or 2,000 years of church history. We're just going to go straight back to the Bible. We don't need creeds and confessions. You've heard the mantra, no creed but Christ. And unfortunately, that's given Baptists a bad name. I think it communicates the idea that we are arrogant enough to believe, as we heard this morning, that our interpretation of the Bible is actually infallible. We don't need other people. We don't need the insights of 2,000 years of Christian theology and development in Christian theology. And one of the reasons why we as a church are deliberately and overtly confessional, it's even on our signage, it's on our bulletin. One of the reasons for that is because we don't want to be isolationist. We don't think it's healthy. We think that there is safety, there is value in identifying ourselves with the flow of Christian history and identity and theology. It's an outworking really of what we confess when in the Apostles' Creed, when we say we believe in the communion of the saints. There is this aspect of not just the saints that are alive today, but the saints who've lived throughout history. And so we're often viewed as isolationist because we seem to sort of stand apart from church history. But there's another reason why we as Baptists are painted with the isolationist brush. And that's because we believe in local church autonomy. We aren't like our Dutch Reformed brothers and sisters or our Anglican brothers and sisters, where there's a synod making decisions and there's a denomination and there's this hierarchy that we heard of this morning. We believe that the local church is accountable ultimately to Christ and Christ alone. We are under the direct lordship of Christ. And so we don't like this idea of denominations. In fact, a denomination is probably a little bit of a swear word amongst Baptists. We don't like that idea. And again, for our Presbyterian and Anglican brothers and sisters, that's troubling because there's this seeming lack of accountability. This idea of independent churches, for them, that's a swear word. The idea that a local church can really be independent from a sort of larger organizational body or system. They would say to us, what do you mean you guys answer only to Christ? Surely that doesn't, isn't safe. But what I want to point out to you tonight by way of introduction as we consider what it would mean for us to join an association of like-minded Baptist churches, something like Solar 5. What I want to point out to you is that historically speaking, when we talk about our Baptist identity and when we go back to the particular Baptists, the sort of movement that was birthed out of Puritanism in the early 1700s, it's interesting that their instincts immediately was to say, we can't be isolated. We need to identify ourselves with the broader Reformed tradition and community, and we need to organize ourselves in associations. If you read the foreword to the 1689 Confession, one of the main, if not the primary reason for the confession, is because these Baptists wanted other people in the Reformed position camp tradition to see that they stood in the same tradition. There were one or two areas where they differed, but they they saw themselves as standing within this stream of theology. So they didn't want to be isolated theologically. But as I said, they also very quickly organized themselves in associations because they saw the danger of being sort of truly independent. They believed that it wouldn't be wise or biblical for a church to sort of be an island. They saw the need to have a sort of more a broader association between different churches. So, for instance, in our confession, the longest chapter in our confession is the chapter on the church. And in the last two articles, it deals with the need for fellowship or communion between local Baptist churches. So our confession says, when churches are raised up by the providence of God, insofar as they enjoy opportunity and favorable circumstances for it, they should have fellowship among themselves, so among different churches, different particular Baptist churches, for their peace, growth in love, and mutual edification. So this is part of our Baptist DNA. It's part of our Baptist identity and part of our Baptist conviction. If you think that what it means to be Baptist is that we are completely sort of divorced from church history and church tradition, that we completely reject the idea of the authority of church tradition, and you think that it means sort of just being one little local church on its own, facing the world on its own, that's not historically been what Baptists have believed. And I think that theological or that historical insight is important by way of introduction. But I also want to, before I give you four brief reasons why I think it would be wise and why it would be beneficial and why it would be biblical for GBC to join an association like Solar 5, tonight we really want to answer the question, why would we do this? You know, I think that's a conversation worth having. You know, should we just do it because that's what all the cool churches are doing? Are we just doing it because that's what everyone else is doing? How will GBC benefit, and how will the kingdom of God benefit from our membership with Solar 5? That's really what we want to get to tonight. But before we get to that, I think one of the things that I'm not going to deal with tonight is looking at actual biblical passages dealing with the idea of, you know, church associations. That's just not my purpose tonight. But I think it's helpful to realize that, much like with formal church membership, where you don't have a chapter and verse that says thou shalt be a church member, in the same way with church associations, you won't see, you know, a commandment to organize yourself into a formal sort of association with other churches. But with both church membership and with church association, it's sort of just assumed. When you read the New Testament, it's sort of just taken for granted that if you are a Christian, then you are a member of a local church. And if you are a local church, then you do live in communion with and in fellowship with and in association with other churches. And so if you want to see what this looks like practically in the New Testament, you know, I'd encourage you to read the book of Acts. But Acts chapter 11, I think, gives a good example to us. So we read in Acts chapter 11 of some people being converted to Christianity in Antioch. And immediately when the local church in Jerusalem hears that there are converts in Antioch, they immediately send Barnabas out to go and disciple these new converts and to help plant this church. And he sends to go and, you know, get Paul, and they stay for a year and they establish this church. And so there's flow of information, there's flow of resources. You get to the next chapter and there you have the church in Antioch sending resources to the church in Jerusalem, because it was during a time of famine. And so you see this sort of network of churches developing right at the very sort of beginning of the New Testament church. Acts chapter 13, Acts 15, and the Jerusalem Council is another example where churches get together to sort of discuss a theological problem that had arisen. And so all of that, as I said, you realize that this is just assumed. It's not, we don't have to have a chapter and verse for it because it's just so obvious. But it's helpful, I think of belonging to Sola 5 as something similar to belonging to a local church. The benefits, they are these mutual benefits and responsibilities, and they're very similar, because just as you join a local church for mutual encouragement and edification, the same thing happens between like-minded churches who belong to the same association. Cooperating in ministry initiatives that you know, on your own might not be able to do, but you know, when you're part of a church, you would be able to do it. In the same way, churches within association pool resources together for ministry initiatives. There's value in shared identity based on shared convictions. There's something just encouraging about belonging to a network of churches that think the same. And you know, you don't have to wonder who you're in the foxhole with, because you know these guys are on the same page. You can trust them. So we're going to get into some of that tonight. Just very briefly, what are the benefits? How would GBC benefit, and how would the kingdom of God benefit from our belonging to an organization like Sola 5? Well, the first benefit is doctrinal unity and accountability. Doctrinal unity and accountability. As I said, you want to know who you're in the foxhole with. You want to know that you really are brothers in arms. You've got the same objective. And so it's, you know, you don't have to guess when there's a Sola 5 church plant, you know, whether or not this is worth backing or investing in. But I think there are a number of reasons that, you know, if you just think very, very, very positively, the benefits of belonging to a larger association of churches that share our doctrinal convictions. You just think of what happens, or what, just think hypothetically, if we had a pastor who suddenly passes away and there's no contingency plan, there's no one who can step in, where do we go, you know, to look for someone to replace this man? Well, if you belong to an association like Sola 5, it's so easy. As I said, there is this flow of information. You contact Sola 5. They let it be known throughout, you know, the network of churches. You know, does anyone know of someone looking for a calling, or someone who's just finished his theological training? Maybe you've got a pastoral intern who's been waiting for a call. So you can immediately see the sort of that there is this positive benefit. Another thing to consider is, if we have a family in our church who are, you know, providentially they need to relocate to, I don't know, Beaufort West, and you know, how do we know how to steer them to a faithful church? Well, again, you know, you contact Sola 5, and you find out if anyone knows of a church there, and sometimes, you know, the church might not actually belong to Sola 5, but they sort of might be like us. They in the process of you know, joining, or for whatever reason they haven't joined yet, but they are like-minded, and someone knows about a certain guy who's planted a church there, and we can direct them in the right direction. So that's sort of a more positive benefit. But our confession also highlights, I don't know if negative is the right word to use, but another aspect of doctrinal accountability when things really go wrong in the church, and how an association can help deal with you know, disciplinary issues gone wrong, or some conflict that can't be resolved in the local church, because that's where our Presbyterian brothers would say we have a problem, because if you can't sort it out in the local church, you know, you've got no other sort of recourse, and they would say that's a weakness. Well, listen to what our confession says as it anticipates problems like these, and views an association of churches as a helpful sort of safety net in times like these. So the confession says, cases of difficulties or differences doctrinal or administrative may arise. Touching on the peace, union, and edification of all churches in general or an individual church. Other cases may occur when a member or members of a church are injured in or by disciplinary action that is not in keeping with truth and order. So what do you do if you know you believe you've been wronged in church discipline? You've been disciplined for some unbiblical reason or in an unbiblical way. Well, you can actually appeal then to Sola 5 to step in. So here's the response. In such cases, it is according to the mind of Christ. That's strong language. It's according to the mind of Christ. For many churches having fellowship together, so in this association, to meet through their messengers, so they would send a representative to different churches, would send representatives to consider and give their advice concerning the issue in dispute and report their advice to all the churches concerned or the individual church. Nevertheless, so just this clarification, nevertheless, these assembled messengers are not entrusted with any church authority, strictly speaking. So there's accountability, but there's no hierarchy. Neither do they have any jurisdiction over the churches themselves to exercise any discipline, either over any churches or individuals, or to impose their decision on churches or officers. So you get the point. You see the value here that if there's something that can't be resolved in the church, and you just think with the technology that we have today, you could have a Yochi at Robertson, and you could have a Conrad in Zambia, and whoever, you know, very quickly on a Zoom conference meeting, discussing this issue, and you have the wisdom and the impartiality of other men looking at this issue from a different angle, and ultimately the messenger can come back to the local church to say this is what we propose, but there's no authority, there's nothing binding, and so you can see the value of that, and not to sort of open old wounds, but you wonder if we had an impartial person actually involved in 2017, how things might have turned out. So this is really a safety net, and it just shows how there is just as there is in the local church, we're keeping one another accountable doctrinally and morally. There's this larger sense of an association of churches keeping individual churches accountable, and I think that's a wonderful benefit of belonging to an association. So that's number one, doctrinal unity and accountability. But secondly, and I might be speaking out of turn here, but I think this is probably the main reason for Sola 5's existence. But the second reason is collaborative mission and church planting. I think I've mentioned it before, but many historians believe that the modern missions movement that started 200 years ago with William Carey, they believe that is still the most significant historical development of the last 200 years in terms of the impact that it's had on the world in shaping the modern world. But just think about the fact that there would be no modern missions movement without the Baptist Missionary Society, but there wouldn't be a Baptist Missionary Society without the Northamptonshire Association of Particular Baptists. In other words, there was first an association, a particular Baptist association, that was founded in 1765, and about two decades later, you have the establishment of the Baptist Missionary Society and the birth of the modern missionary movement. And just think of it that it's because of a handful of pastors from that association who instructed their churches to pray once a month, every first Monday of the month, praying specifically for revival and world evangelization. It's because of that William Carey set sail for India. And just think of the impact that's had on the world. And it all started with an association of churches. And so, as I said, one of the main reasons Sola 5 exists is so that like-minded Baptist churches can join in prayer together and pool together resources in order to plant faithful Baptist churches throughout Southern Africa. There are a lot of churches being planted And there's so much garbage going out in terms of theology and ministry philosophy and obviously the prosperity gospel and so on. But as I said, when you belong to an association of churches where everyone has the same commitment to the Bible, the same theological convictions and instincts, it's far easier, and you can met the Bible beter gemoed. You can back church planting initiatives, but not only church plants. I think there's another ministry that we often don't value the way we should, because we think of church plants because that's so Pauline. You know, Paul planted churches. We should be planting churches. But another ministry that's in recent years gained more attention is the idea of church revitalization. And I know of a number of churches in South Africa where the church has a really sort of a very spotty past with theological error and moral compromise, and the church, the numbers have sort of dwindled down to 15 or 10. And now there's a Reformed Baptist pastor pastoring the church, and he's trying to, you know, revitalize this church and get it going. And part of, you know, the benefit of belonging to Solar 5 is again, you get this flow of information, and you know about this church, and we can be praying for them, and we can be, you know, helping out in whatever sort of resources they need, possibly even sending people. I hope that we would one day be at a point as a church where we would be willing to, with a smile, send our best people. You know, there's a struggling church in Oudtshoorn, a struggling Reformed Baptist church, to be willing to say, you know, are you willing to relocate? There's a church there that's struggling. They need people. So being committed together to a larger sort of kingdom initiative and vision. So Solar 5, as I said, enables us to tap into this kind of flow of information that would help to facilitate that. Speaking of flow of information, that brings me to point number three, meaningful, well-informed prayer. It can be frustrating when you're sort of praying very vaguely for churches, even if we, as we do every Sunday, pray for Solar 5 churches. But one of the things that Solar 5 does really well is that I think it's weekly that Stuart sends out a newsletter from one of the member churches that goes out to all the other churches, and all the churches pray for that one particular church and for their needs. And I think it would be a good practice for us at the Sunday evening prayer meeting to actually, you know, read the newsletter for that week and to be praying, and that way you begin to grow a love and an appreciation for the church and for the elders there, and to grow a burden for them, and you actually get to know them, even though they are far removed from us. But I mean, just think of the benefit of, you know, maybe once every couple of months a newsletter being sent out, and all these churches in, you know, Southern Africa praying for GBC, praying for the things that we burdened about, the things that we are concerned about. So meaningful, well-informed prayer. Again, the modern missions movement started with churches like ours in an association like Solar 5 praying for the same thing, praying for evangelization, praying for revival and revitalization. Then point number four, and this might be something that if we join Solar 5 might be way off in the future for us as a church, because you realize that if we join Solar 5, we would be the only Solar 5 church in the Garden Route. There are a couple of Solar 5 churches in Cape Town and the surrounding area, but there aren't at the moment any Solar 5 churches in the Garden Route. And so mutual encouragement and fellowship, which is the final point, and the point that our confession actually raises as the one of the reasons for belonging to association, I don't know if we'd immediately benefit from that because all of the activity is sort of up in Gauteng. And I don't know if we'd ever be involved in the yearly Solar 5 conference, which is a big part of what it means to belong to Solar 5. But, you know, I could foresee Knysna Baptist Church joining Solar 5, and there are other churches that might end up joining Solar 5 as well. But I mean, even just setting aside Solar 5 for now, can you see the value of, you know, Knysna Baptist Church and George Baptist Church, all the men getting together on a Saturday morning for a men's breakfast? You know, having someone bring a short word and having some discussion, but getting to know other brothers who are like-minded and share the same convictions, or organizing a joint prayer meeting, you know, once a quarter, whatever it might be. You'd be surprised by what an encouragement it can be to meet with others who share our convictions. I remember that I wasn't all that excited to go up to the Spurgeon Fraternal a couple of years ago, but it was one of the most meaningful experiences that I've had in my time as a pastor, and just the encouragement of being together with guys who struggle with the same things and have the same sort of burdens and same theology and so on. So it is my hope and prayer that we as a church would be a meaningful part of Solar 5, because, you know, just as you can be a member and that's just an administrative thing, it's not really meaningful or significant. It's possible to belong to something like Solar 5 and not really get any benefit from it because you're not really, you know, committed to the organization. I don't know if we were ever really a meaningful part of the Baptist Union, certainly not in the 10 years that I've been here. But I trust that you can see the benefit, not just for us as a church, but for the kingdom, of formally committing ourselves to an association like this. That I think we would be able to do more for Christ and for the gospel. Let's pray.